Well, welcome to March 2026, Gallatin Valley and online listeners. You are hearing Desert Oracle Radio replay on KGVM Bozeman Community Radio 95.9 FM and streaming at kgvm.org. I'm Roxana, your host, and I'm recently returned from my journey down to the Southwest, and it was such a good one. But all the laundry and putting things away is still in progress here at the cabin, and it seems to be mud season in our garage. So while I attend to getting things back in order here, I have a couple Desert Oracle Radio episodes from March 2020 for you. This first one reminds me of sitting around a table with Ken and his writer friend, listening into their conversation. I hope you enjoy this sort of thing. Today's first Desert Oracle Radio episode was released by Ken Lane, March 6th, 2020. Here is The Other Room.
Transmitting from the Mojave Wilderness in Joshua Tree, California, now is the time for Desert Oracle Radio, the voice of the desert.
They don't want crusading journalists looking to bust up cults.
I was just trying to go to the night baths, but we were already in Big Sur, and you can't reserve by telephone, which is why I was calling them on the payphone, and we didn't have phone service to reserve it on the internet. So it was actually just a very sort of sad near miss.
Since everything's relevant.
Everything is relevant.
On this show, anyway.
Yeah, I mean, you know, everything. I have a sneaking suspicion that everything is relevant all the time in general, which is terrifying.
But it is. It is true. And sometimes it takes a little strand of RNA shooting out of people's nostrils to really illustrate the point.
It really is at tremendous speed. I spent most of today buying, you know, hand sanitizer and frozen vegetables. And it's this, you know, it's sort of an interesting pre-apocalyptic feeling that I hope does not actually come to pass.
You're doing it, so you're prepping.
I am prepping. I'm prepping a little bit. I've been thinking a lot about the preppers. But, you know, I mean, of course, the situation has already come to pass for so many people. So,
yeah.
You know, I can make jokes about buying frozen vegetables. But really, it sucks. Like, it's bad.
And it's already here, so.
Yeah, exactly. It is.
I'm not.
Yeah, I mean, are
you
just thinking about it all the time? I feel like I'm thinking about it all the time. I'm not sure what to do either.
I think I came to some sort of peace yesterday. Mm. It was kind of, you know, a little self-convincing, but if it is like it looks like that 40 to 70% of people are going to get this in the next year, and
yeah. Yeah.
Then, you know, what the hell can anybody do? What's the point?
I mean, for most of us, it probably won't manifest as anything other than something like the flu. But
or
yeah,
even not that. There's apparently a lot of otherwise healthy people who test positive who've had no symptoms ever.
Did you actually? There was a. Like a Reddit thread going around, and I don't know its credibility, of somebody saying that he came back to New York after a trip in Asia, and he was feeling ill, and he went to the doctor, and his doctor called the CDC for permission to test him for the coronavirus, and they said no. Like, they wouldn't let him get whatever kit it is that they use to test, so he just went home and self-quarantined instead.
Oh. That sounds
swell. Seems great.
Yeah,
it seems great. I definitely want to just have to rely on everybody's best judgment.
Yeah, because that has proved so such a winning strategy for us in this past century. Yeah, we'll end up doing what's best for all of us.
Yeah.
So you went to something that, I don't know, maybe a year from now, we'll be saying, remember when you could go cover conferences before the decade-long quarantine?
Yeah. I went to Conscious Life, which is a new age and sort of alternative healing expo here in Los Angeles. Obviously on the other side of town from where I live. I don't live on the New Age Healing Expo side of town.
Is that the west side, I'm guessing?
That would be the west side, yes. that's where that would happen. So I took four trains and a bus to the healing side of town. Conscious Life has been going on since 2002, I want to say. And then it's precursor expos that were run by other people have been going on since well before that. There was one called Whole Life before that went on for quite a while. So, you know, it's the best place to see what is sort of new and happening in the world of alternative healing stuff before it hits Goop. And then it also, unlike every other sort of alternative healing expo, it also has a bunch of UFO stuff, which is what I find so intoxicating. The sort of place where those two worlds meet each other is very interesting.
Yeah, it is. And it's... I guess there was always something of that in the 60s psychedelic kind of era going into the 70s. There was a lot of crossover with consciousness and religion and psychedelics and magic mushrooms.
Yeah. There's sort of a place where all those things kind of meet. And there's this, I wrote about this a little bit, but there's this kind of like thread of what I called mystic Christianity that runs through a lot of the UFO stuff. It's basically where the UFO stuff meets the angel stuff, meets the healing oils type of behavior.
So, are you talking about the essential oils that people...
Yeah, like, I mean, not Young Living, because Young Living is a little bit too sort of suburban and, like, basic for this crowd. But, yeah, you know.
I don't know a lot about this market. Let's jump back for a minute, because some of our listeners haven't left the desert in a number of years. And they may, this may be the thing that shocks them into never leaving again. But what is Goop?
Wow. Oh, yes. Yeah. So Goop is the kind of new age lifestyle platform that was launched by Gwyneth Paltrow, the actress. And so it's a website and it sells stuff. And now they have a TV show on Netflix. It's all very alarming. It's sort of a mixture of harmless nonsense and like less harmless nonsense is basically how you could characterize it.
So... They're selling things. Are they selling?
They're selling a lot of
conferences, or
they're selling products. So right now, I'm just pulled up the Goop website out of curiosity. So the thing that people have heard about is that she was selling these jade eggs that you're meant to put inside your vagina for toning, but you're not actually meant to put them inside your vagina. It's like
for
a bad
idea.
Toning.
Like
yeah, like a Kegel type thing. But so she got fined a bunch.
Who the hell is Tony?
Yeah, we're getting really deep into it now.
I only know Goop from when it was a newsletter, when I still worked for Gawker.
It was a newsletter. Yeah, no, it's way beyond that now. Yeah, they were selling these jade yoni eggs, a task force made up of prosecutors from a bunch of different counties in California investigated the yoni eggs and found that Goop was making sort of misleading statements about them. Like, there was no scientific basis for what they were claiming the yoni eggs could do. They said they could balance hormones, regulate menstrual cycles, prevent uterine prolapse, and increase bladder control. They can't do any of those things.
They were making medical claims.
They were making medical claims.
Quack on the radio selling.
Yeah, you really
medicines.
Can't do that. Yes, yes.
And
you're really not allowed.
I assume they got out of it because she's rich.
Mm-hmm. No, they were fined $145,000 by this task force in California, this government task force. It's like a settlement, basically. So they're paying this fine and they're reimbursing customers, essentially. But, you know, Goop is worth like several hundred million dollars. So I don't think it is going to hurt Gwyneth too much.
Boy, I wish these attorneys, these watchdogs would find out about what's going on out here in Joshua Tree.
What's going on in Joshua Tree?
In Sedona. Oh, they're making some elaborate claims.
Are they really? Yeah. Yeah, I was a little surprised again at Conscious Life. You know, I had somebody telling me that this pine oil blend that he'd put on my tongue was going to clean my pineal gland, which, like, no, I don't think it is, to the best of my knowledge.
Have you had it checked?
You know what? I haven't, honestly. I don't know about the state of my pineal gland right now. And I actually don't know that I could find out. So you know what? For all I know, it's cleaner than it used to be.
Maybe, yeah.
But, I mean, Conscious Life is kind of nice because it's like, you know, it's up a lot of sort of Goop-level claims, but minus the sort of money and glossiness and celebrity backing. And so for whatever reason, I find it less irritating. I find it more sympathetic when it's just a bunch of sort of lower-level, significantly odder people.
Would you say that the people who go to something like this are, I don't know, more active and involved in their whatever their pursuits, their esoteric pursuits, than say the ones who were just buying the really expensive stuff out of online catalogs? Or are they roughly the same?
I would think that if you're sitting through, you know, multiple panels every day about whether angels are connected to aliens, or, you know, preventing amnesia during your reincarnation process, or spiritual purification using far infrared saunas, like those, I would guess that you're pretty committed. You're pretty deep in it.
How much does it cost for a consumer to go?
Day passes are like $40. There's a bunch of different kinds of passes you can get, but then, you know, there are a bunch of special panels that you have to pay more money for. You know, like I went to see this panel called Ancient Secrets, and it was Linda Moulton Howe, who I'm sure you know, and a bunch of people who've been connected with Ancient Aliens, the TV show, and America on Earth, and they all talked about, you know, the cover-up of our true history, and so I had to pay like an extra $15, I think, to learn about the cover-up of our true history. Yeah, yeah.
And that was in your Vice article.
It was, yeah, well, that was a good one.
What's the headline of the Vice article so people can look it up?
I think it's something like, America's biggest New Age expo is just trying to keep things from getting weird.
Good. Yeah, I just, I did not see that when it first came out, so I just read it when you were talking about it the other day.
Yeah, I went because I had gone there in 2017 when I was writing my book, because my book is about conspiracy theories, and a bunch of people that I hope to write about were at Conscious Life. So I wrote about this sort of conspiracy element that's always been present at Conscious Life. You know, a few years ago in 2015, they had a conspiracy panel that was like Jim Mars and an InfoWars guy. You know, the following year they had a anti-vax panel. So there's always been kind of an undercurrent there. But the founder of the expo, Robert Quicksilver, sort of told me that he doesn't like the conspiracy stuff. He got rid of it. It's not there anymore. But, you know, it is. It is still there. So I was kind of exploring that tension this year about why it is, when you have alternative healing and UFO stuff, why some of the darker conspiracy stuff comes in. You know, like there were QAnon guys there this year.
Oh.
Yeah, they were, I mean, again, though, guys who, I guess, sort of don't want to be affiliated with the proper QAnon movement anymore. It's sort of fracturing the QAnon people. They're kind of going in a lot of different directions.
I mean, it's like a messianic cult, isn't it?
Hmm. I mean, it looks that way to me, but, you know, I guess I'm not a cult expert. But certainly, to me, QAnon seems like it is premised around a day of judgment that is yet to arrive, and, like, sort of unshakable, somewhat alarming faith in a leader who is said to know all and see all.
Right.
So that doesn't seem great to me. But
and there have
again,
been,
what do I know?
We're speaking tonight on Desert Oracle Radio with Anna Merlin, the author of the critically acclaimed book on modern conspiracy theories, Republic of Lies. Did I say it right?
Yeah. That was good. Thank you.
So you are a knowledgeable person about this stuff. Mm-hmm. And what struck me about QAnon, which I have not followed closely because, unlike you, I'm not paid to do that, so...
No, there's no reason to do it, really.
I don't have to go that far into that particular lagoon, or swamp,
no,
I guess you could call it. But whenever I have checked in, it's very specific stuff, and with specific dates, and then the dates come and go, and... Whenever I see that, I'm reminded of, like, Seventh-day Adventists or Jehovah's Witnesses, you know, who all had, in the Great Awakening, these deadline days, these days of judgment, and then they pass, and they gotta get around it. I mean, Christianity itself had to deal with that.
Right, they gotta redo their math.
Right, and they have to change the meanings, you know? It's like, well, he's not literally coming back, you know?
Right. Yeah, I mean, QAnon definitely has a lot of that. And again, like, I'm only sort of paid to follow them, so I just kind of duck in and out. I'm not like, you know, there are these guys who, like, have a whole podcast just about QAnon stuff and developments in QAnon stuff, and they're very good at it, but I could never. God help me.
Oh, no, you need some oxygen now and then.
I mean, I do my best. So, I sometimes feel like I am sinking, you know, further and further into something else. It's called QAnon Anonymous, by the way. It's a very good podcast.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's very fun and good. But yeah, I feel like I have stuffed my brain with so much weird stuff as it is that maybe I should, you know, leave some space for something else, like read a novel occasionally or like open a window.
Right. And this is something that happened to you at Conscious Life.
Mm-hmm.
You had a describe it. I don't want to put a title on your
a title on the thing. Yeah. So I should say that I guess I didn't have a strong version of the thing at Conscious Life, but I started thinking about the thing, and the thing is essentially this. Awareness that I've had sort of periodically throughout my life of this other place. Like I always think of it as the other room. That is the terminology I have for it. And sometimes something will happen. I will become aware of this other room, this next room that feels like it is a place beyond my conscious reality, beyond my current reality. And it feels like it is a mysterious place that I don't fully understand, that I can only see sort of through a crack in the door, and where I'm not there, and I wouldn't be myself if I were there. It's very hard for me to describe, but it feels like a different plane of existence almost. And so I was thinking about it at Conscious Life because, as you know, obviously as skeptical as I am about most things just by virtue of my job, you know, I also do have these glimpses of the mysterious, I guess I would call them. And I'm very interested in other people's glimpses, you know, which is what, like, High Weirdness, the book, is about, really. It's about three very intense mystical experiences that three very different kind of 70s visionaries had. You know, like, what I'm talking about and what I'm sort of inarticulately trying to talk about is something that a lot of other people have glimpsed, too, in a much more realized form.
Yeah. And going into an event like this one that you were recently at, where even if you're a true believer in one of the things, you're skeptical about a bunch of other stuff that you go by. Like, you might be there because you believe, you know, bay leaves will, I don't know, cause reverse aging or something.
Sure,
and
yeah.
That's your thing.
Kind of reverse aging. Yeah. Uh-huh.
And you go there and then you walk by, like, the people who think it's spearmint. And you just kind of, like, you know, oh, children.
Right. I mean, that is a big thing there. You know, I was thinking about this because there's a bunch of different people who claim to be ascended masters or kind of evolved light beings. You know, are something more than human, seems to be what they're implying that they are.
Right.
But when you're in an exhibition hall and there's like five of them and they all have booths, you know, right near each other, surely you have to think at some point, like, well, they can't all be ascended masters and light beings and, you know, otherworldly, not quite human creatures. Like, that can't be possible.
Yeah, and if they were, I don't know, that seems like the poorest way to get your work done, to get your message out.
To get your message out. It does. It seems like the long way around, I guess, to stand there in a conference ballroom at the LAX Hilton handing out, you know, one flyer every 15 minutes.
Although, you know, I'm reminded of, like, Paul in the New Testament. He did it. He'd go to these markets, and at the edge of the market, they'd have people preaching the various religions or traditions in these cosmopolitan cities.
Mm-hmm.
And now and then he'd go do that, and they'd beat the crap out of him.
Huh.
And especially if he started off, because one of his traditional things was to say, look, I am a Jew, just like you. You know, he'd go and talk to a group of Jewish people.
Sure.
In their section of the market on market
day. Right.
And they'd be like, oh, all right, you know, how you doing? And then he kind of sneaks in the, actually, I'm not anymore. And then they'd get all pissed off. It's like, come on.
They would get mad.
Yeah. So they'd stone him and whatever. So I guess they don't stone people at Conscious Life, but I guess if nobody's at your booth, that's kind of the modern.
People at Conscious Life are wonderfully open to a wide variety of different ideas, you know, is what I would say. But I mean, I've seen this too in conspiracy communities. You know, there are ideas that seem to me to be very much at odds with each other, and people manage to sort of make space comfortably for a couple different things at once, is how I would put it.
Yeah. Which is kind of nice, you know, to run into people and they're just kind of friendly about everything. Yeah, you know, burn sage.
Yeah, light, sure.
You know, queen of the universe, light beings, guardian angels, whatever.
A lot of mediums. I did run into one of the mediums and I said, you know, what do you think about all these other mediums here? And he said, I don't think there are any other mediums here.
Oh, so, you know. Real kind of democratic debate stuff.
Yeah, it was, you know, I mean, it was very, very similar. Yeah, I ran into the Lemurian Fellowship, who I wasn't familiar with.
Mm.
They're a mystery school in Ramona, California. I don't know where that is. I think they are literally like off of a little highway somewhere. But they're
the
a Christian
mountains
mystery
of San Diego County.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. So they teach whatever it is they teach through a correspondence course, and they were very pleasant. They were all wearing matching polo shirts.
Oh, how sporty. How San Diego.
Very sporty. Yeah. You know, and I asked them a couple questions, and then they handed me a booklet, and they said all the questions you're asking are in the booklet, which, you know, fair enough.
Was it true?
Yes, it was. I was absolutely asking really stupid questions. You know, basically they teach that there are teachings in place that can be sort of accessed by this group of wise elders called the Elder Brothers. And you can sort of find them through this correspondence course. So yeah, I mean, everybody at Conscious Life is kind of approaching a version of what I approach sometimes, this other room, this next place. And everybody's other room is a little different. And some people have managed to get the door further open than I have, but seemingly, you know, a lot of people are looking for it. I mean, you said that you've had experiences like this throughout your life, that they're not something that you can actually call upon or predict when they're going to happen. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. A lot of these schools, the Rosicrucians in San Jose, there's lots of variations on this kind of theme. Say that you can train yourself to do it.
Right.
And with some simple kind of smoke and mirrors, like literally candles and mirrors and meditation and that kind of stuff. And I don't doubt that other people are able to do that, but
I'm sure
it has not worked that way for me. I think I can convince myself maybe, you know, like, all right, maybe. But it's quite a different thing than when you get blasted with something. Like, where did that come from?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was not there.
Right.
It was dropped into my head, and now I can't get it out of my mind for 3 years, 2 weeks, whatever
right.
it is.
Right, right. Yeah.
Now, psychedelics can help, apparently.
So I hear.
I didn't have any great luck with that most of the time. I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
You know, it was like, yeah. Finally, I did have one through what turned out to be some absurd accidental overdose.
Oh, right. Said of LSD?
Yeah.
And what was it like?
Oh, it was, it was overwhelming. It took a very long time, both in our timeline and some other ones. And while I certainly don't remember all of it, I came back with some very clear memories that were real experiences that I remember as clearly as I can remember anything memorable in my waking life.
Right. What kind of memories?
Oh,
if you're comfortable talking about them.
I think I wrote about it at some point, you know. Probably on a blog, and nobody read it because they were racing to get to the comments.
They really probably were.
Yeah.
I
had this habit at Gawker because I was so bored writing about things. And what I would do is I would write about whatever the thing was that was topical. And then by the end, I would just kind of veer off into what I was actually thinking about or reading about or whatever at that time. And it would just go in this total different direction, and only very rarely would anyone ever notice.
Yeah.
And so
I actually read some of your old Gawker blogs a while ago.
Were they? I don't remember.
Yeah, they're very good. They're very respectable blogs.
It's all I wanted was to be a respectable blogger in this world.
You wrote a very good one about Bigfoot that I enjoyed a lot, which was essentially that people really care about Bigfoot and they don't actually give it about you know, actual wildlife or saving actual wildlife.
Oh, I don't remember that. But
it was great. Yeah, I don't remember why I reread them, but yeah.
Thank you for actually reading some of them. You're one of the few.
I excavated them. I had a friend who was working for a media company who will go unnamed, and she didn't have a lot to do. They didn't really know what anyone was supposed to be doing at the media company. And so one of her jobs was to write these captions for these videos. She was appearing in these news videos, and then she had to write captions. And the captions were just, or like, they were descriptions in like the YouTube, like, you know, YouTube versions of the videos. And the descriptions that she wrote were just nonsense. They were just absolutely deranged. And again, like, no one ever noticed. Her bosses never said anything. I don't think anybody ever actually saw these videos. They just sort of existed in some other plane.
It didn't like, help us, you know? It did not help.
No, it didn't help us. It didn't fix media. It didn't fix media, and now we have to sit here and talk about our psychedelic experiences on a podcast.
You're listening to Desert Oracle Radio, and this is your host, Ken Lane. Tonight we are having a late night conversation with the author and journalist from New Mexico, the land of enchantment, Anna Merlin.
have reached the bottom of the hour, and you are listening to Desert Oracle Radio Replay, broadcasting on KGVM 95.9 FM, Bozeman Community Radio, and streaming at kgvm.org. Next up, from March 19th, 2020, Ken gets around to talking about other writers in this pleasantly meandering tale he calls The Dark Watchers.
Transmitting from the Mojave Wilderness in Joshua Tree, California, now is the time for Desert Oracle Radio, the voice of the desert.
Night has fallen on the desert. Did you get that last blast of winter out here in the American West? Maybe the last blast, you never know. The heaviest I've ever seen it snow, in the Mojave anyway, was in the merry month of May, a dozen odd years ago. Snowed in. Well, whatever little bit of weather we get out here this time of year, it is to be appreciated. It's a beautiful thing when misty clouds are blowing around our east side mountaintops, like you're in the coast range, the coastal range, all of a sudden. Minus the fog, I suppose, and the humidity that goes with it. But sometimes the wind blasting the house sounds like the waves crashing at Big Sur, like you're at sea. A sea of sand. And then in the morning, you spend an hour or two picking up all the exotic and common bits of garbage that have caught on your fence. If you have a little bit of fence. It's nice when you pick up some old styrofoam soft drink cup and it comes apart in your fingers and blows into the ragweed that you're gonna pull any day now. Speaking of the sea and the wind, some years ago I spent some time alone in a narrow little cabin built high up on the rocks over Muir Beach. And this little cabin was built by a sailor. A sailor and adventurer and prolific author by the name of Charles Borden. And if you remember your old milk bottles, yeah, he was related to the Borden dairy family. And he got a little income from this good luck, which somewhat offset his bad luck, as he did not have tremendous success as an author. But that's all right. Most people who write books, most people who create anything, they do so because they don't have a choice in the matter. They are compelled. Well, Charles and Rosalie Borden lived in this narrow little house atop Spindrift Point, as it's called. He designed the cabin like one of the seagoing sailboats he kept and loved. a kitchen of galley size. Marine plywood interiors and narrow side decks as well with rope railings. Little bookshelves with twine lines to keep the books from spilling in heavy weather. But instead of a sailboat's portholes, the long south-facing wall was all glass. And when you settled into the narrow bed alongside the great expanse of glass, you could see the sparkling lights of the container ships slowly entering the jet-black Golden Gate. In the daytime, you look down upon the backs of the seabirds, a dizzying view that ended in crashing waves and swirling little spindrift pools between the rocks. I don't know if I've mentioned it before, but it was at that little cabin that I found the story of Dr. Edmund Yeager. He's the pioneering desert biologist who was the first such scientist to verify the existence of a hibernating bird, the common poor whale. Charles Borden was a conservationist, a man of the land and of the sea, and his little bookshelves were loaded with journals and monographs that dealt with his many interests. The story of Dr. Yeager and his hibernating bird would become the first story in the first issue of Desert Oracle. Some of you sent me an article from the San Francisco paper last week, a newspaper feature about one of the great old California legends, spanning many centuries and many changes in management, as corporate historians like to say. It told the story of the Dark Watchers. The Dark Watchers, the spirit sentinels who've long been seen looking down from the ridgelines of the Santa Lucia Mountains. The oldest stories were passed down by the Esalen, the coastal tribe living in a spirit-filled natural paradise of plenty before the disastrous arrival of the Spaniards. But the Watchers remained in these steep, misty mountains, rising above Big Sur and Monterey. The Spanish, arriving 300 years ago, acknowledged the eerie apparitions with the name Los Vigilantes Oscuros. The Dark Watchers. Robinson Jeffers wrote about them, as did John Steinbeck. And this is a good newspaper feature, even if it leaves out the name of the, quote, local Indian tribe, end quote, which passed down these memories of the Dark Watchers. The Esalen nearly obliterated, their name borrowed for a New Age institute in Big Sur, where Hunter Thompson used to be the security guard. Imagine that. The reality of the Dark Watchers is maintained throughout the article. Yes, they are shadowy, always at a distance. Real, but not exactly there. Like those angels in the movie Wings of Desire. but maybe of easier temperament. Perhaps they are manifestations of memory, gathered together for a little while in something like corporeal form. Interested in the affairs of humanity, but removed from it. And this beautiful mystery, with its mystical quotations from Jeffers and Steinbeck, then slams clumsily into a roadblock of garbage. The rational explanation. In newsrooms of decades past, some local expert at the back of some burnt-out editor's mid-century Rolodex would be dredged up once again from obscurity to cough up some hairball scientific explanation for the mysterious, the transcendent, the unknown. In our present day, the editor rarely needs to suggest the other side of the story. The reporter is supposed to provide her own dose of disenchantment, the equivalent of soaking down the lovely little campfire you just managed to build from bits of splintered wood and fire and the quiet atmosphere of misty mountains in the deep darkness of night. The dark watchers of the Santa Lucia Mountains, having spanned the centuries from the Esalen to the Spanish, to the gold rush, to whatever strange goings-on conjured up by the likes of John Lilly at the Esalen Institute, are now casually, stupidly thrown to the dogs of disenchantment. There's nothing to it. Nothing to this fantastic mystery. This beautiful folklore that has survived the centuries because it was real. The shoddy evidence offered up to refute this beautiful truth is generally a stray line of text found on a Wikipedia page on Deadline, perhaps about some completely unrelated mystery on the other side of the planet. In this case, in the mountains of Europe. Something in this case called the Brocken Specter. I quote with regret. In reality, the Brocken Specter is the result of a funny quirk of science. It happens when shadows like those of a hiker are cast on particularly misty mountain peaks. If the sun is behind the observer, the mist plays with the shadow, making it look huge and menacing. The shadow can even dart away as the mist suddenly shifts or breaks apart in the breeze. In reality, What has changed in the telling of history in our time? What has most changed in the telling of history in the years since the Industrial Revolution? We have, out of embarrassment, stripped the supernatural from our lives. Remove the miracles, redacted the guardian angels, the singing mermaids, the hounds of the Baskervilles, the wailing banshee, the premonitions and visitations, the historical, scientific, and literary works of the 20th century are marked by a stubborn need to explain away the part of life that was most fulfilling for most of us in centuries past. The wonder, the delight, the awe, the fear of a mostly invisible world alongside our reliably physical reality. In the first decades of the 21st century, they have not done any better. In our anti-culture's ceaseless struggle to tamp out the remnants of a million years of humanity, or 6 million years, or 250,000 years, or whatever the computer tells you is today's accepted length of existence of our various peoples, we must be told night and day that the gods never existed, that spirits are fictions, that our lifelong accumulations of ESP between family and friends, gut checks, clairvoyance, foreboding, bad mojo, psychic vampirism, and everyday magic does not and never did exist. The people of a few centuries ago were somehow more adept at every aspect of daily life. Generally in tune with the natural world, as that was where they lived. But they were completely deranged regarding the soul, the dim kingdom, luck, fate, ritual. The pyramids stand around the world, but we furiously deny the spiritual reasons they were built at such great cost of resources, time, and human life. One of our kind listeners who sent us this article said something to the effect of, "Hope this doesn't come from an area with too much rainfall for your taste," something like that. First of all, dear Saint Minerva, do not let me be shackled to a particular place or subject for the rest of my days. Please don't let me be shackled. Please do not bury me in that particular box. Especially a box of sand. Anyway, there's always a desert angle. You see, the ancient human settlement that became the Esalen Institute on the site of the old Slates Hot Springs was in many ways a metaphysical child of a certain English author who spent his last decades living in the Western Mojave Desert, near the remains of the old Llano del Rio commune. Aldous Huxley. Author of Brave New World. A little too accurate for comfort in our present decade. And such countercultural, psychedelicized nonfiction classics as The Doors of Perception. Huxley, speaking at Stanford in 1960, completely upturned the psyche of young Richard Price, better known as Dick Price, the co-founder of Esalon at the old Hot Springs of Big Sur. Dick Price only recently released from a mental institution where he was committed by his own wealthy parents because he was a little bit different than every other crew-cut moron in 1950s straight America, was deeply influenced by a lecture that he heard Aldous Huxley give in 1960 at Stanford. It was called Human Potentialities. And once Esalon was up and running, offering its intoxicating mix of dramatic natural environments, strange new and old philosophies, casual nudity, good wine and heavy drugs, all the greats of the counterculture arrived to teach and to learn, and Huxley was among them. Huxley wrote a number of now classic works from his 40 acres in the West Mojave, including a book of wonderful essays called The Desert, although the essay called The Desert is just one of them, and a curious children's book called The Crows of Pear Blossom, a wonderful little fairy tale. Yes, we know the crows were really ravens, but that's all right. Huxley had terrible problems with his vision during much of his adult life. Not his inner vision, though. It is a tragedy how the human body tends to start breaking down as soon as the attached human brain begins to make a little bit of sense of some things, occasionally. But that is, we suppose, the price of wisdom. The price of admission, anyway. No wisdom guaranteed. There's a little desert valley where I've walked many hundreds of miles over the years, probably thousands by now, and unlikely as it seems, so close to the endless hustle and bustle of Joshua Tree with its millions of tourists and all-day traffic jams, the multi-million dollar architectural mansions built over the humble ruins of Jackrabbit homestead cabins, Here in this desert valley of boulders and a few surviving junipers high up in the rocks, on lucky, lonely evenings just after sundown or sometimes even beneath the white winter sun, I have seen something. I have had something catch my eye up there on the ridgelines. Sure, most of the time it's a bighorn or a coyote, moving swiftly and with stealth as they do. A few times over the decades, I've watched a coyote or sometimes a big red-tailed hawk sitting on one of those boulder tops, their steely gaze on me, making sure I move along, clear the area. But other times, really just a handful of moments I recall, there has been something like a shrouded figure that fades as soon as I try to focus upon it. A trick of the light and shadow, well, that's likely. Then again, magic is all about trickery, arranging the dust motes and the shadows in a particular way, which is the way the spirit beings manifest into a temporary shape, something like what we are. From Amboy to Zyzix and across the great Mojave Wilderness, this is Desert Oracle Radio, broadcasting from Joshua Tree, Friday nights at 10 p.m., and at various times on our makeshift network of participating community radio stations from coast to coast, to which we would like to welcome KZMU, 90.1 and 106.7 FM in and around Moab, Utah, Saturday night, so I hear. Wherever you are, we are on the podcast player. Look for Desert Oracle Radio, Soundscapes Tonight by Joshua Tree Zone, Red, Blue, Black, Silver. Support for this program comes from listeners like you. That's right. Thanks to our friends who contribute to the cause on Patreon. Find out more at desertoracle.com, and good night from the voice of the desert.
So we're going to talk about a couple events. Museum of the Rockies will host a documentary screening on Wednesday, March 4th at 6 p.m. at the Hager Auditorium. And this is The Story of Us, The Women Who Shaped Montana, Episode 3, free and open to the public. And on Thursday, March 5th, you can attend a lecture by Dr. David Varicchio at 5:30 p.m. in the Hager Auditorium. The title is Digging Deeper into Egg Mountain, a Unique Late Cretaceous Terrestrial Assemblage. Admission is included with your membership, or $5 admission for non-members. The full worm moon is March 3rd, and there's a blood moon eclipse at 4:33 in the morning, that morning. That will be the maximum of the eclipse. So it actually starts earlier, but you can look all that up if you want to watch it from start to finish. And hopefully our skies are clear enough that we can see this. A big thank you to Ken Lane and Red, Blue, Black, Silver for creating and sharing Desert Oracle Radio with us. Thanks to KGBM, its staff and volunteers, and thanks to you, listener. This program broadcasts on the air at 95.9 FM, Bozeman Community Radio, or you can stream it online at kgvm.org at 7 Sunday nights and 9 Monday mornings. Our past Desert Oracle Radio replay episodes are archived for you on the kgvm.org website. Watch those skies, keep doing good things and sweet dreams. Stay warm and well, and I'll see you next week.